A written transcript of this episode is provided by Starburst. For more information, you can see the show notes.
Welcome to Data Mesh Radio with your host, Scott Herleman, sponsored by Starburst. Starburst is a single platform to help you activate all your data, no matter where it lives. Check out our new Data Products for Dummies ebook to learn more about how your organization can utilize data products. To download your free copy, head on over to starburst.io.
Data Mesh Radio is provided as a free community resource by Data Mesh Understanding. It is produced and hosted by me, Scott Herleman. I started this podcast as a place for practitioners to get useful information about Data Mesh, and we're at over 200 episodes. I've now left DataStax, thanks for all their help in founding things, but I've left to start Data Mesh Understanding, which is also helping practitioners to get to the information needed to do Data Mesh well. We have free implementer introduction and roundtable programs, in addition to the more advanced yet affordable offerings. So please do get in touch if you're looking for more information on how to approach Data Mesh. Just check datameshunderstanding.com for more info. There's also a helpful organization of past Data Mesh Radio episodes there if you want to dig into specific topics rather than digging through 200 different episodes. So with that, let's hit the funky intro music and listen to what you'll hear about in this interview episode. Finding and delivering on a good initial data mesh use case. Bottom line up front, what are you going to hear about and learn about in this episode? I interviewed Bastian Carmio, who's a customer delivery architect of data and analytics at AWS Professional Services. To be clear, though, he was only representing his own views on the episode. So here are some key takeaways or thoughts specifically from Bastian's point of view. Number one, your first use case at the core should A, deliver value in and of itself, and B, improve your capabilities to deliver on incremental future use cases. That's balancing value delivery, improving capabilities, and building momentum, which are all key to a successful long-term data mesh implementation. Number two, when thinking about data mesh or really any tech initiatives, it's crucial to understand your starting state, not just your target end state. You need to adjust any approach to your realities and make incremental progress towards that kind of target end state. Number three, potentially controversial. Relatedly, it's very important to define what success looks like. Doing data mesh cannot be the goal. You need to consider your maturity levels and where you want to focus and what will deliver value for your organization. This is different for each organization. So, Scott note here, this shouldn't be controversial, but many companies are not defining their mesh value bet. Like, what is data mesh actually going to get them if they do it well? Number four, even aligning everyone on your organization's definition of mesh success will probably be hard, but it's important to do, right? Aligning on what that success actually means, important. Number five, for a data mesh readiness assessment, consider where you can deliver incremental value and align it to your general business strategy. If you aren't ready to build incrementally, you aren't going to do well with data mesh. Number six, a common value theme for data mesh implementations is easier collaboration across the organization through data. That leads to faster reactions to changes and opportunities in your markets, how you interact with customers. Mesh done well means it's far faster and easier for lines of business to collaborate with each other, especially in a reliable and scalable way. And there are far better standard rules, policies, ways of working with that collaboration. But organizations have to see value in that actually coming to fruition, or there may be a lot of resistance to your mesh implementation. Because if they're not going to be a lot of value, then they're going to push back, right? Reasonably. Number seven, as many have said, you must approach data mesh in a thin slice. Trying to focus too much on any pillar at the expense of the others leads to challenges. Scott note here, to Mac literally has a figure on this she shares often in a lot of her presentations. It's easy to get unbalanced with your mesh implementation if you ignore a principle, and fixing that takes more effort than doing the thin slicing and the correct approach in the first place. Number 8, potentially controversial. As you build out your mesh capabilities, especially your platform, think about what you need to actually deliver on the use cases at hand and deliver only that. Don't get ahead of yourself and try and build out 8 million capabilities. It's fun to build capabilities, but it's easy to build a monstrosity of a platform instead of proper abstractions to make building and managing data products simple. Number 9, doing data mesh well is about managing trade-offs. There are trade-offs at the use case and the implementation level, and it's okay to get those kind of wrong. Just look to fail fast rather than hold on to bad decisions. Don't be precious with your decisions and build in ways to make evolving and improving easier and possible. Number 10, MVP can be minimum viable product or minimum valuable product. You need to define what value actually means for each use case. It's easy to point to pain and start solutioning, but not end up addressing the pain really or creating value. This will help you prioritize and deliver the most value compared to effort early. Number 11, relatedly, having a clear perspective on value in your MVP means you are more easily able to change and adapt as you learn and deliver. If you thought value was going to come from X, but early indications are Y is way more important or is much different than expectations, you can more easily pivot towards Y. Number 12, data products don't magically create value. They should be bets on value delivery. So you need to have ways to gracefully retire data products when the cost of that data product exceeds the incremental value. And that can be very early, or that can be, you know, after quite a while of time, right? Oftentimes, a bet was a good bet, even when it didn't pay off or it is no longer paying off. That's really important to understand. You're making investments. Investments don't always pay off. Number 13, continuous communication and driving buy-in, especially with C-level execs, is unfortunately crucial to your data mesh implementation success. If they don't value better data capabilities, few will invest their time and effort to really reinvent the way your organization does data. Number 14, relatedly, you need to tie your data mesh implementation to the overall business strategy. Execs need to know why you are doing something like data mesh and how it will deliver value. It's not an overnight success, but it also can't be a 3-year project before you start to see value. Speaking to that gets more people to lean in so you can build momentum. Number 15, finding and leveraging your data success champions is always hard, but it's necessary to build that momentum. Think about building champions quite early. Think about building champions, not just finding them. Number 16, when you're trying to get an exec to buy into something like data mesh, always put it in terms of what's in it for them. Don't try to get them bought into some grand mesh vision first. Why would they invest their valuable time and resources doing this work? Find their pain points and what something like data mesh will do to address those pain points specifically. And Scott note here, again, incentivization. They're not going to be incented to just do awesome data work because it's awesome data work. We got to get away from that. Number 17, relatedly, trying to get someone to just take on data ownership without the understanding of what the rest of the organization is going to do to make ownership much easier. You know, mainly that's through the platform and federated governance to make it so they can actually own their data. If you don't do that, the conversation is probably not going to go very well. It's not going to be a fun conversation. Number 18, when thinking about data mesh, it should all come back to value. If you can't specifically point to value that will exceed your effort for doing something like data mesh, it's probably not worth it for your organization. What is valuable to your organization, and how will data mesh help you capture that value? Number 19, relatedly, as you are on your data mesh journey, you have to be honest in assessing if data mesh is really working for your organization. It's okay to stop if it's not. Number 20, the data mesh principles sound really great and helpful in the abstract. but they just might not be aligned to value with the way your company does business. That's okay, right? If you can't get a ton of value from all this cross-functional data and, you know, really high quality and scalable and all this stuff, data mesh isn't for you. That's fine. That's okay to not go down that. Finally, number 21, potentially controversial one. It's perfectly acceptable to have hybrid approaches in a data mesh journey. There's a perception that everything should be decentralized, and that just isn't always the best approach. Don't get caught up in dogma. Scott note here, the decentralized everything is a misunderstanding of what Jamak has said. Also, as you are on a journey, your current state won't match an ideal end state. Focus on evolving while delivering value, not trying to be perfect today instead of getting to good. Now, that's not permission to just not do any work, but you don't have to get so wrapped up in, is this the perfect picture of what I want to be in 5 years? You got to start somewhere and you got to make progress.
Okay, enough of just me. Let's hear from our awesome guest in this interview episode.
Okay, very, very excited for today's episode. I've got Boston Carmio here, who is a customer delivery architect of data and analytics at AWS. But to be clear, of course, he's only representing his own views. And we're going to be talking about this thing that has been a persistent topic in a lot of conversations I have behind the scenes, but not that much in front of the scenes for many reasons, but about like, how do people actually get going? Where do they struggle? Where do they make mistakes? What's working? What's not? You know, what are the patterns that he's seeing from talking to so many companies that are moving forward and actually succeeding versus the ones that are kind of tripping themselves up? And so we're going to talk about that. Some like, why are people struggling at the start? What is some getting started advice? This thing that I've been talking about for a while as well of maintaining a balance between, you know, making an actual impact, having that ROI, creating some momentum, but also learning how to actually do data mesh. So it's not just like success of the projects, it's success of the overall implementation while still giving people freedom rather than being like, this is the only way, you know, data mesh is about that decentralizing and that federating. And so if you're not doing that, then are you missing a point? And then, you know, as well, talking about the kind of domain incentivization and readiness, are you actually ready for this? And then it's okay if you're not, but be honest with yourself. So we're going to be talking about a whole heck of a lot of that stuff. But before we get into that, Boston, if you don't mind, if you could give people a little bit of an introduction to yourself, and then we can jump into the conversation at hand.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Scott, and thanks for having me. So I am Boston Carmio. I am a customer delivery architect, data analytics in AWS Professional Services, covering the EMEA North region. I'm based out of Netherlands. I have about over 10 years of experience working in the data architecture space. Had very different roles, from technical roles such as data engineering, as well as more business customer-facing roles, such as product owner of data platforms. And in my current role, I'm focusing on modern data architectures and helping customers from diverse industries with their data transformation journeys. And last 2 years, I have been focusing a lot on data mesh and how to drive organizational transformation for customers regarding this topic. Yeah, and especially looking at how to start and scale this journey. So a topic which we can talk about a lot, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I think that it's one of those things where a lot of past guests and myself have talked about, hey, just get going, just get started. But you also do have to kind of have a little bit of space to create the run up. You don't just say, okay, we're doing data mesh and start the next day. You're like, okay, like how do we build up enough interest and momentum that we can not just have that first domain and then move on, you know, and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, where's my second domain? So let's start a little bit about
where are you seeing the most common struggles, or maybe what are the most common anti-patterns that you would say, this is something that people run into and that we should avoid, but that it's also sensible that this is a pattern that is an anti-pattern, and you know, like that it's something that people are trying to go through. Is there something that you know, I know we were kind of talking about trying to pick only one pillar or things like that. Like, how are you seeing this kind of actually manifest when you're talking to your clients, so other people can say, "Oh, wait, no, we're heading down the wrong path because we're doing that same thing."
Yeah, exactly. Now, this is really a good point. I think getting started on this topic is really hard. And also, if you could look at all these organizations, they all have a different starting point. And I think this is important to realize, right? A lot of organizations have different way of handling data in their ecosystem. They have different kind of maturity levels. And actually, if you look at their maturity levels, it also is about what should then be the goal. Because if you look at the data mesh implementations and the whole framework, everybody interprets success differently, right? If you would say, like, when is your data mesh success to organizations, you will get all different answers. I'm pretty much convinced by that. And also, if we look at the customers that at least I am involved in, and over time, I've seen that a lot of successful data mesh implementations are never the same because they all focus on different kind of capabilities which provide immediate value for them. So just to give you an example here, is that, for instance, one organization might promote data discoverability because they find it very important that people can find the data using a data marketplace or data catalog. But on the other hand, you have a lot of people or organizations that promote the data interoperability because they think that data contracts are very important and be able to basically support that, really emphasize on that topic. A lot of these organizations, they always seem to be focusing a lot on the technical side of things and never really talking so much about cultural change, because this is where it gets really hard, right? If you look at the data mesh, we all know, right, the four pillars, the four principles. A lot of organizations that I talk with, they are, when they start doing this, they're looking at these four pillars and they try to address them all together, which is a huge challenge, right? Because as we all know, it's a social technical paradigm. So that means you have to cut across technology, cut across people and processes. So doing this all together is basically boiling the ocean that will never work, because it's going to be too big to be able also to act very agile in an agile iterative fashion, right? Because you want to make sure you can also improve it. Now, on the other hand, focusing on one pillar or one set of capabilities, which I see also quite a lot at organizations, also is kind of an antipathy. Because if you dive in a lot on one pillar, let's say the data as a product pillar, you can really go deep in that. You can get all the capabilities that you require, which is for you very important to get value from and to be able to put that into motion. But then you could not be very compliant anymore with, once you want to address, let's say, the governance side of things, or maybe the data domain-driven kind of design and thinking there, right? Then you need to basically go back into the design mode of how you thought about how these things would all work together. So overall, like, one of the things that is really working well, I would say, if I look at this organization, is that you do a thin slicing. So what you do is look at these four principles. You take, instead of like looking at it from a vertical point of view, every pillar, you need to dive deep to get all the capabilities that you require for all the design principles of the data mesh. But instead saying, like, I'm going to make a thin cut, and I'm going to see what do I need to address per this pillar for a smaller kind of valuable increment that makes a lot of sense to the customer or organization, right? So just to give you one example here, is that you might say, like, well, you know, we need to create a data product. The data product needs to be adhering to maybe some governance principles, right? But it could be that you just say, like, well, you know, maybe you want to establish just one very simple global governance policy that's going to say something about data quality. And it can be as simple as, let's say, you want to have a data quality rule that checks just your data on how many null values it has, right? And be able to report on that. If that creates value, then maybe you want to cut it off there and say, well, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do for our initial data product. We know there's way more things that we need to do. There's way more other things that we need to attend to. But we're saying this is going to be in the scope of this initial step towards a data product. And every other great idea we have, we're just going to put it on the back burner. We're going to put it in the backlog. We're going to address it in a different way. But this is how we are going to go into this. This is something that I see as very...
Well, one thing that, you know, a couple of things in there of that kind of balance, I think of this a little bit as fitness of, you know, if you talk to people and they're doing any weightlifting, don't skip leg day, you know, like you don't, or especially you don't work out all of the muscles around one muscle and not that one muscle, because then, you know, everything gets very just, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I want to catch up with that one muscle. Well, it doesn't really work well with the, you know, the chain of muscle is kind of a good way of thinking about how everything works together inside of an organization. But yeah, that thin slicing, one thing that I've talked to a lot of people on that seems to work well is when you're choosing your use case, like choose something that doesn't have complex governance needs for your first and maybe your second or third even use cases. Some people start to say, no, you want to go something that's a little bit more complex in your first three or four for your governance, so you don't build a platform that then all of a sudden when you do have complex governance needs, you're completely screwed. So it is like that balance. But at the same point, you know, a lot of people say, don't do something that has PII for your first use case. No matter what, don't do it. Because it's just, you're trying to learn so many different things that if you throw in that extra bit, you're just adding so many complications. And you can find use cases that deliver value without that. And or if you can't, then there's something kind of goofy with your ability to find use case value, or your use cases are so complex that maybe data mesh isn't even going to be right for you, because you're going to have to be so far down the road before you could be delivering value. And this is about lean deliver of value and quick deliver of value. So I liked a lot of what you were talking about there. And you even talked a little bit about what is your data mesh success, and that, you know, I have two books on the back burner that are, one is I started writing data mesh success metrics. And then I realized, no, I need to write one on data mesh success factors before I can even talk about what are the metrics as to what you need to measure. It's like, what are the factors that actually make you successful? But it's exactly what you talked about. People need to make a bet as to what's going to lead to them to have success, and what does success look like? Is that simply, you know, Vista talked about, Amy Edwards was saying, we thought that if we could get people using the data, even if they're not using a great use case right now, they learn what the data is. So when they have a better use case, they know exactly how to use data, where it is, what data products they should be using, and like can jump on that extremely quickly. And they started to see that really snowball and chain and things like that. So, and exactly what you're talking about with thin slicing, like, can you give an example of what a good thin slice looks like, right? You know, Jamaka said, maybe you only need data processing and storage is like your entire platform capability. It's like you need the ability to do minor transformations and store the data. And, you know, your governance needs to be, okay, they can understand a little bit about the quality and they can get access to it. Like how deep are you seeing that where people are being successful, where they're not biting off too much that they can't chew, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's absolutely true. So I think that when you talk about how does this thin slice actually look like, let your use case decide that for you, basically, right? So what you want to make sure is that your use case is going to be the one that drives the development of your foundational capabilities of the data mesh, right? So for instance, you talked about not having PII data, right? Which seems indeed a very good choice because you don't want to overly complex it, right? But if for some reason your data, your use case might require that, then you might need to take that into account still. Because in the end, you don't want to make any... when you make trade-offs to what to do and what not, in the end, you want to make sure that it adds value, right? It doesn't have any point of creating something that you think like, well, at least adheres to some kind of design principle of the data mesh so we can tick it off on our checklist, but it doesn't really create any kind of value. I think that's not really the kind of way you want to do. You want to make sure you start from your use case. Now, if you have your use case, what you're looking for is how to start small but also be able to scale fast, right? So what you want to do is when you deciding on, okay, we need a domain to work with, right? We need a data product to work with. Well, then of course the big question comes about, okay, are we starting with source aligned data, or are we having a consumer aligned data, right? Like how is that going to work? We need to think about that. Also, does that kind of domain have an existing environment? So when we talk about creating self-serve infrastructure, it means that they need to have the toolings available to create the data products, right? It could be that in your use case, you're seeing that for your domain that you selected, because there's a use case where a data product needs to be created that comes maybe from one domain with a couple of data producers, but they might not have the self-serve infrastructure available, or at least in a limited kind of way, and which is not sufficient to create a data. So then that could be the perfect way to say, well, we need to provide them with some data product provisioning kind of service for creating a self-serve infrastructure. So that means you're going to provide them with the necessary tools and capabilities, which is required for that use case. Nothing more, nothing less. So that means that, for instance, let's just talk about, they might have need a lakehouse setup for their storage, right? And some compute capabilities in order to do some data transformation. If that is what they need, then that should be part of your data product provisioning service that is being done by the self-serve infrastructure. You can imagine there could be a list more of things that need to be done, but just focus on that one. So it's constantly thinking about, what do I need to do here? And it's kind of like an art of deduction, if you know what I mean, right? Where you look at, like, there's so many things that can be done, but we need to cross off the things that we actually don't need in order to enable that use case and put that on the back burner. Just try to really skin it off and really choose the things that are really required for that use case. I think that's a good way to go. Now, one other thing is when you are looking at these kind of implementations from a use case, it does make sense not to just go into it like completely in an all-round kind of freewheeling kind of way, because the data mesh framework still has its design principles. And you still want to make sure, you know, it adheres to that. So if you look at, for instance, interoperability, you could say, like, well, yes, that is, of course, important for us. But the use case actually says, for us, it's maybe not that important. Or maybe we only need, for instance, for now, only a simple kind of contract registry, for instance, right? That could be that little puzzle piece that is needed to run this use case. So you still adhere to design principles, but you're just taking a little bit there, right? So you're just doing it step by step. That could be it. So I think it's really about looking at the data mesh from a more design principles kind of way. Make sure that the choices you make are adhering to design principles, but don't boil the ocean. Just keep it really small, because eventually, if you start doing this, things might not be there and things might be missing or things might be wrong. But there's nothing wrong with that, right? So there's nothing wrong with failing, but if you fail, fail fast. Just make sure you can recover from it quickly. Make sure you learn from it, and make sure that in an iterative feedback loop cycle, you can actually apply those learnings. I think that's the key to really do the fits.
Well, and one thing you're kind of circling around without using the exact phraseology of it is MVP, which is either a minimum viable product, minimum valuable product, or, you know, we just had Darren Wood on and he was talking about MLP, which was not My Little Pony, but minimum lovable product.
Yeah.
And so, like, thinking about getting to delivering value early, but not necessarily the entire value of the use case at the start is great. And you were kind of circling around talking about that. Like, how have you been talking to people about getting to something that is of value? Because data people aren't used to being able to add on or change or augment, and that fail fast. Any failure in data had a huge blast radius because we were always doing these big, big projects. And so now we don't need to do that. Cloud really enables that in a lot of different ways. It means you can move a lot quicker. It means you haven't bought all these servers that you've allocated towards this one thing. It means that you can scale up much more quickly if something is seeing success. But how are you? And I think data developers kind of get that. I think it's funny. The longer that you've been in data, the more scar tissue you have of getting something wrong and it being catastrophic. So, like, how are you finding having those conversations with people about that capability of failing fast and why that's still of value, rather than spending 3 months doing the scoping to try and get it exactly perfect and still not getting it all that well because the world has changed in that 3 months, versus getting it out in 3 days into people's hands and going like, what's going to make this better? Like, that's what we've learned to do much more on the software side, but on the data side, we're still struggling. So like, how do you think about communicating that minimum something product and getting to value versus 100% of value, and that's still a better approach? Like, how can we communicate that internally when that's historically not worked well? So people have scar tissue and it's their pushback is reasonable and rational.
Yeah, exactly. Now, that's a very good point. So when we talk about the MVP, indeed, that's absolutely right. When we identify an MVP, together with customers or as an organization, it's very important you do that together with the business. So it's IT and business together, right? It's very important because one of the things you want to do in an MVP is to clearly define who are your personas, who has benefit of this solution, who has pain from this solution if this solution is not going to be there, right? That makes it very clear on what you exactly want to do and what value actually needs, because value is also not black and white, right? Value can also come incrementally, and you have to really think about and really making it sharp for yourself and time box it. What is it in it for me, from the business, for the IT to go forward, right? So when you look at the MVP and failing fast about these topics, I think the trick here is to build the momentum, right? So when you talk about getting value out of your MVP, what you're really trying to do is get this momentum where you can say like, well, okay, now we are developing something that will enable direct or indirect business value for whatever you have defined within your MVP. And from there, make sure you accelerate on it. So you need to make sure that you grasp that kind of value that you're creating and then move on. Because one of the most important things, even within an MVP state, right? Because I've seen MVPs where in the beginning you scope something, this is the value that we want, this is the outcome and the result that we'd like to achieve. But then halfway we change it because we already have learnings that things are going to change. So even in your MVP cycle, which can only be, let's say, maybe 6 to 8 weeks or a bit longer, maybe really keep it small, still there you need a feedback loop ready together with business and IT and the data people to see, hey, does this work, right? One of the things that is important to realize when you talk about failing fast, that was a learning from my side, is that failing fast indeed sounds good, right? But because then you can recover from it quickly. But you also need to make sure you have a mechanism in place to gracefully retire data products, for instance, right? Because you're going to experiment, you're going to do things. But you also need to make sure that you are going to let go of that data product and you have a process for it. Because you don't want to, well, first of all, creating a data product does not have to be perfect, and it will not be perfect, but you also need to make sure it doesn't linger around too much that will distract you from the value. You need to, retire it, get learnings, and move on. So I think the main conclusion for making this MVP a success and convincing to really realize this value is this feedback loop already from the start. Because for a lot of people, this is new kind of content. And for a lot of people, this is almost greenfield. We actually do not know. Well, you said it perfectly right. Nobody has the answer to this, I think, for data mesh is still quite a new concept. And from my experience, I learned that every data mesh journey for every organization is different. And because of that, you cannot template it that much. You need to be going on this journey and communicate in a very regular feedback loop to make sure you constantly reflect on, okay, are we doing the right thing? Is this going to give us the value or not? And then also be proud and say and be honest to yourself, no, we're on the wrong track. We have to try to do it differently, right? There's nothing wrong with that. That's just inherently to data mesh implementations,
It's really frustrating from my perspective because I have not found a single person that has shut down a data product. I have asked for years and it tells me there's something wrong because we're making bets. Bets don't always pay off, right? Like I I have a friend that's big on sports betting and has been for a long time, and we've had this kind of conversation. And I'm more of a fan of long shot bets, and people are like, you know, if there'll be something that's like a 15-1 for this team to win, and I'm like, oh, you know, if it weren't such a pain in the butt to actually place the bets and stuff, I'm like, I would make that bet, and then the team lost. But they played probably better than what people were expecting or whatever. And people were like, oh, see, it would have been a bad bet. And it's like, no, because to me, the chance of them having won at 15-1 was 10-1. So, you know, I'm going to get paid better over the greater scheme of things, over the greater span because of that. And that, like, finding that value and even what you said a little bit in there was talking about changing the definition of what is the value of this. It's one of these things where a use case might not prove to be valuable, but the value was in figuring out quickly, was it valuable? And so even though it didn't generate value, it generated value because you were able to quickly figure out, is this what we should be doing or not? And like those in-depth concepts don't play well when we're in an environment like we are economically right now, where everybody's so focused on, you know, on what is my return on investment? What is my return on investment? So if you've got anything there, I mean, it might just be an insight that both of us are kind of frustrated that this is far more difficult than it feels like it should be. But how do you communicate that value? How do you communicate the value of the learning or the value of the ability to make changes rather than trying to get it perfect? Like, how are you talking to people about that? And not just talking to the developer, but to their greater reporting chain as to, this is why this is a value to be able to do this. It gives you this, that, you know, that freedom, that flexibility has a significant value. So how do you communicate that to people?
Yeah, that's a very good point. This is also one of the hardest things to do. So one of the things I ask myself is, like I said in the beginning, that every data mesh implementation is unique and the journey is unique and everybody has their own definition of what a success is. But I was also wondering, is there a kind of common goal or kind of common success theme, at least for this, right? And I do think it is there. And I think that it's within the collaboration, right? So if we look at the data mesh, you know, and if we look at the network of the nodes in the data mesh, which are the mains, if they are interacting in a collaborative fashion, they contribute directly and indirectly to business outcomes, right? So basically what you're doing here is that you are enabling everybody to be more data-driven because you start to work together on data, right? I always give the example of a data producer giving, basically providing a data product to a data consumer, and the data consumer notices that the data quality is not up to par. And that could be because we have not implemented any kind of data quality ruling for that. And they say, hey, you know, but this is really important for me. Oh, if that's so, then maybe we should address that, right? And then slowly you are increasing the maturity and slowly you're increasing the business value. It could be direct or indirect to the data product itself. So this is where the data mesh, in my opinion, really shines, right? It enables business value in many aspects. By decreasing the time to market of data products, it's much more quicker to now deliver the data products to the right consumer. But also things like what I just said, right? It's the data quality increasing on the governance level. So I think this is the main message. And again, I understand this is really hard because it might sound a little bit vague to a set, let's say, a C-level who needs to be has to give a buy-in for the data mesh. But the data mesh for me is just this big network of nodes that enable collaboration. And once collaboration is really enabled, then you will see that direct and indirect business value can be enabled, because eventually this is where really data-driven comes for, right? So when we talk about failing fast is all about this collaboration and doing it together, right? So I would say this is the main message you need to give. For a lot of people, this would be a bit hard to understand because they don't know what the data mesh actually means or how it looks like. It is hard to make it very concrete, right? Very tangible. It's kind of a thing that is being, I always say that the mesh success is not on itself, but the people who are using the mesh. The more people who are using the mesh and more in a collaborative, more productive and qualitative kind of way, then the data mesh will be a success. So everybody is basically chipping into this, right? And as you said, you know, I don't think you should be betting on one horse, to say in sports betting terms, right? You should really look at it in the wider perspective. But this is the main message, I think, that will convince also C-level. This will drive your data-driven organization into ways that I think a lot of other frameworks of our initiatives might not be able to do.
And I think I like that aspect of direct and indirect, because I think it is historically how we've communicated value of something like a data quality or a data governance initiative is very much indirect value. Like, doing this means that we can generate more value of our data, versus focusing super on a use case is very much about the direct value of that use case. But then that's not repeatable. That's not scalable. That's not, we build something for that use case. And data mesh is a way to quickly capture direct value while enabling a building capability to capture more and more indirect value, which then also leads to more direct value, because, you know, the whole idea of the interoperability between all the nodes and stuff, which, by the way, that is another anti-pattern that we didn't talk about, which is the idea that every data product must be interoperable with every other data product. But I want to make sure that's not what people are taking away from what I'm saying, but that growing amount of data that each incremental data product is interoperable with is able to satisfy incremental use cases, which creates additional direct value. But there is a lot of that indirect, not just like we know how to do this, but that we're comfortable that we are capable of doing that, and that we've set ourselves up to be able to react to opportunities more quickly. And so even if those opportunities don't present themselves, there is still value in creating that readiness, right? I kind of think about this when I was living in California. I had an earthquake kit, right? And there was never a big enough earthquake. You know, I think I had one that hit like a 3.5, and, you know, it was like, okay, whatever. I know some people get really freaked out by them, but after I had like a small one when I was in San Francisco, do the weirdest thing where it just threw my bed like a foot and a half to the side. And that was literally the only thing. It didn't shake. It didn't do it. It just was like, did my building just get hit by a truck or something? But anyway, I had a earthquake kit, and it had a significant amount of value, even though there was no earthquake. It was that I was prepared in case that happened. And that's kind of not how we're thinking about the data work, but we're thinking about the business work, that data mesh sets us up to react when opportunities are there to actually do that. But we have to build up this capability. So I'd love to hear, we've talked a little bit about this, but like, and I know you're kind of on the professional services side, so it's not that you get to go in and do a lot of the change management as well, but like, you know, have you absorbed anything about getting people an understanding around the value of learning how to do this, right? That, again, we focus so much on either these big initiatives that are only indirect value and or these things that are very direct value, but like that learning how to better deliver direct value while improving your capability around the indirect, like that actual learning aspect is one of the most important aspects of maintaining momentum and value and things like that in data mesh, but most people don't put a lot of emphasis or value on it. So I'd love to hear, have you found anybody that has a great way to talk about that internally to get those non-data execs on board and loving this?
Yeah, it's a hard point, right? Because the thing is, like, everybody would like to start doing this, right? And jump right in and want to make the difference in terms of really establishing the data mesh framework and getting success out of it, right? So when we talk about learnings, it's often seen as something like we do that at the end of the project, right? We do a reflection, we bring it all together, and then we put it in a drawer and let it collect dust, and nobody's going to look at it, right? You know how these things work. So the thing is, what I also mentioned is to make sure that these learnings, it's part of the process, right? So when you start creating a project, an MVP, a use case, like almost like usual people who then go into these kind of agile projects, they do these 2 or 3 week sprints or something like that. Make sure you use that to collect these learnings, right? And to do something about these learnings. So the moment you, let's say that you did in a sprint and you basically developed some kind of a data prop where you did some kind of design using some kind of canvas, you know, to establish what is important for this data product, right? Then immediately, if you would look into a review of this, and there will be a lot of feedback on that, that is all fine. You capture that feedback. But the moment you start to work with it, you start to gain learnings. You see that some things are not working or some things are not relevant, right? So make sure that you enable for yourself as an organization also that you are able to incorporate those learnings. This is what a lot of organizations seem to forget. It's always building the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, right? Give yourself some time to basically look back on what you have built, to assess it. Again, look at the value, right? So we set this thing will bring us some value, direct or indirect. Does it still, or are we on heading on something else here? What are we going to do? And capture that and bring it into the process. It's all about these feedback cycles that you want to put into it as a loop, right? So I think that's going to be one of the most hardest things to do, because it doesn't really have to do so much with data mesh itself. It's also part of how you work agile, right? It's all part of that. But that's the only way to ensure that learning and capturing your learnings and doing something with your learnings is going to be part of the way how you work. That's basically what you need to achieve. And that's already very hard to do, and also very hard to convince, because nobody wants to talk about learning so much. Everybody just wants to talk about the next thing.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. I'm going to try and pin you down. And I think the answer is it depends, which is a totally valid answer, because I think it's the actual correct answer. But how do you think people can communicate that they need to do that, right? When we're talking to the CFO or we're talking to the CTO, we're not talking to somebody who's in the transformation office, because the transformation office should know exactly these things, right? They're the ones that are going to be like, oh, you know, hallelujah, you know, the data people are now on our side on understanding how transformation works. But like, how do you think about that actual communication aspect of these are the things that we have to build momentum, we have to learn how to do this, because otherwise we're reinventing the wheel each time?
Yeah, that's a good point. So one of the things you need to do this when you make this, I see that a lot too, is that where you go on to this data mesh venture, you're creating something that doesn't maybe align so well with enterprise architecture or with your modern data kind of strategy, right? So you need to make sure, if you want to connect to the C-level executives with this story, it aligns with your overall strategy, right? It needs to fit in this place. And that's a communication that you need to make sure you do. And also that not only it comes from the data transformation office or somebody who's within the data space telling this story, this is a story that needs to be told by everybody, basically, by the domains, by the business, right? It's not. So a lot of companies or organizations are looking at this from, okay, this is something that is going to be implemented by a central data platform team. No, this is a organizational transformational frame, right? It's really that what it is. So if you look at that, then also on that kind of level, on the C-level executive level, there needs to be this understanding that what we're making needs to be aligned with the enterprise architecture and with the strategy, right? And you need to make sure that communication is going to be really clear. And the only way to make it very clear is to involve all the people who are playing a role here. But again, right, you start small, so you also make communicate it very clear that this is something that needs to prove its value over time. You gain momentum, you actually are going to accelerate after you gain momentum, and at more use cases, this flow, this journey is also something that you need to have the C-level executives on board, right? This way of doing it, because they might see like, well, where's my value of it, right? What does it bring for me? So you need to make sure that this way of dealing with the data mesh implementations based on use cases, based on gaining momentum and accelerating is also basically accepted by them. And it's always good to have some ambassadors there, right? So people who really, truly are able to advocate the meaning of the data mesh and what it works straight to them, right? So that's also how it works. You need to make sure that the right people are talking to the right people to convince it. But I have to admit, this is really art. This is, it's doing this for, let's say, a data lake is much more easier than for something that is so much more organizational, transformational kind of characteristic, I would say.
Yeah, and a couple of things you said in there. One was, overall strategy. I think this is the thing, we had a panel a while back on connecting the data work to the business strategy and vice versa. And, people think, oh, my data strategy is the thing I need to focus on. It's like your data strategy is kind of your transitional language between your business strategy and your data work. And then, talking to people about what this gets them. And then, this is what I was trying to do with data mesh understanding, but, I've had way too many health issues to really push on it. But a lot of what you're talking about of that buy-in, one, people think of, I've bought this person in, therefore they are stuck bought in. And it's like, it's a switch that I have flipped. And it's like, no, that you have to continually converse with them, but also bringing in external people and being like, hey, here's an external person. And here's what you get out of doing data mesh. Instead of here's what we get out of your domain, we want this data from you. It's okay. Like that's the way most people go in and start talking to them. And they're like, you're gonna be giving us this data from your domain. And you're going in and convincing them that they're going to get a bunch of extra work. Why are you thinking that this is going to go well instead of like, what do they actually get out of it? And a lot of times it's like, we're going to improve your capability with your data. And the people that get the most value from your data is you. And then we're going to prove out as well that your data has value to the rest of the organization. So you're going to get more investment into your data. And guess who gets the most value out of your data? You. And so like, it's just all these double win. But I like what you're talking about of like, how have you found those conversations to work to bring somebody on board that they want to do this? Because that incentivization, we can talk about it at the exec level, or we can talk about it at the kind of line of business exec level. Like there's the C-suite exec, but then there's the line of business of like, your domain is now going to be doing this. How are you talking to them or how are you seeing what works that conversation to get them aligned? Is it, again, finding what matters to them and then bringing it back to the data work and connecting it that way instead of we want the value out of you because we want your data out of your domain?
Yeah. So I like to think that every time before I even go into these conversations, I can expect the answer, what is it for me, right? So okay, you're doing it. So what do I benefit from that? So I try to already ask this question to myself before going into it. Then the another thing that you have to realize, of course, that not every domain is the same. And they might not, while they all ask this question, they might all have their own kind of maturity levels or their own kind of opinions on doing these kind of things. So this you could all take into account in your preparation in the thinking about how do I incentivize domains when we're talking about data mesh, right? So of course you can point out alignment with business objectives, right? With the strategy and all of the other kind of things. But the one thing that at least for me will be a direct incentive is the collaboration and ownership of data, right? So this is, I think, one of the most crucial points, but it can be a very abstract topic. So you need to really try to make it very clear to them and constantly ask yourself the question, why is it important? Why is it important? Because it will allow them to get more freedom, right? But more freedom doesn't mean that you can do whatever you want, right? The thing that is going to be very important to them is that, well, they might say, for me, what is in it for me? Well, I want my data quicker, right? Very simple. I know it's in silos. I cannot get it. Now, I just want it quicker. Okay, then you know that the data discoverability is a very important aspect that for that to basically work from. You can work from this aspect, data discoverability, and then basically dive more into it to get them to a level where they understand, okay, data discoverability is nice, but why do you actually need to find your data more easier? Well, because now I'm trying to find everything. Okay, but then how do you know what to search for, right? Okay, yeah, that's a little bit hard because I don't actually understand the data. Okay, but then imagine having a data product owner creating data products that is going to basically provide you with this data product manifest that has all of these information. Will that make sense? Yeah, of course that makes sense, right? Okay, imagine that you are able to do that. You're a consumer, but now you're going to be also a producer. If you do that, then you can also basically share that easier and then improve the collaboration. And then you see that slowly the changing turns around. So you shouldn't expect to convince them right away. You should just try to find that one tangible kind of thing that really ticks for them, and then try to bring them slowly into the whole framework thinking. And that requires a lot of back and forth, because they want to see how it works, and they want to still be able to say, like, well, I don't want to have too much extra work, right? The fame is like, I don't want to be a owner of a data product, because then I have to manage the data product, and I know the data is really bad, and that only will give me more work, right? So by I understand that, but if these kind of things are the discussion, then you could really, really try to change that discussion, because now you are able to change that, right? You are able to change that, but not only you, but also your colleagues, right? It's again, this network of nodes that do collaboration. You're in it together. So that's kind of like the discussion or the story I'd like to talk about with these domains. But it's not a one-off fake. It's not like one answer and they think, like, oh, what a great idea, let's do it, right? It's really trying to convince them what it will bring for them on the longer term. But really try to pick one thing out that really ticks for them and you can save.
Well, and longer term, but also we're going to deliver short-term value. This isn't a three-year project where... because that's been the big problem with data work, right? Historically is, okay, yeah, we're going to deliver this a massive amount of value to you in 3 years. And they're like, well, one, I might not be here in 3 years. And two, no, you're not, because the world will have changed and all this stuff. So, and I did want to circle back a little bit on one thing you talked about as well, before we kind of wrap up here, is your ability to be able to make mistakes, right? And I wanted to talk about readiness assessment as well. Like, is your organization ready for this? Like, how do you communicate this? How do you figure out if your organization isn't ready? Because that capability of being able to be like, hey, we got something wrong and it's fine. We made a bet and it didn't pay off. That's the point of a bet, is that not all things pay off. So, like, how do you think about having that self-reflecting discussion if you're the data person? You know, you're the leader of the data organization, and you're like, is this ready for, like, are we actually ready for this? Is this the right fit for us? But also, even if it is the right fit, can we do this right now, or do we need to do a lot more foundational work before we can head in this direction? Like, how do you think about that conversation? How do you think about having somebody, and how do you kind of tell somebody, I've told it enough people and nobody listens to me, but it's like, hey, you're not really ready to do this right now, and that's okay, but you're not ready. So, like, how do you think about that conversation going?
Yeah. So I'd like to fake it in such a way that, you know, especially when we talk about readiness assessment, that kind of implies already that you need to do it, right? You need to be ready for it. But often I see, well, it's just not going to be of much value to it to do it anyway, right? As a data mesh, it could be. Or that you're just looking for, well, right now we just need to have access to the data quicker, but all the other things are not really for us at the moment, not that kind of, immediate value, right? So it could be that they are looking at something that they might not need right now. So I would like to circle back in this and always try to think of it. What do you want to get out of it? What is for you important, right? And to be honest, it really depends on the type of organization and how big the organizations are, right? Because in general, a lot of large enterprises are looking at data mesh because of its, well, if you look at all the four principles, it makes all sense to them, right? It's a typical kind of exercise that if you say, well, this is the data mesh, then the only thing you could say, like, well, yeah, it makes sense. Let's do that, right? And that makes, of course, that's very important. But when we talk about readiness assessment, I would say do not try to capture all kinds of non-functional requirements and see, like, okay, what do we need to apply to, and try to tick them off a list and try to assess it that way. I would say start from what is, when we look at data mesh and when we talk about data interoperability and all of the other kind of design principles, What do you need as an organization to get out of it? What is it for you that is really important? Reflect back on your data strategy, of course, right? Because there are elements in there. And then you, again, you're going to try to look at how to start small. Because you might be ready to do something small, but you're not ready to do something really big. And especially if you look at the ladder, not ready to do something really big, nothing is going to start. Nothing is going to take off, right? So again, what you also said, right? These things could take 3 years. Things might change. You might be ready for something big because you comply to the whole readiness assessment. But in 2 years, something changed and you're not compliant anymore because the world has changed, right? So try to, I would say, don't trust too much into a full-blown readiness assessment. Try to see what's important for you. Try to define that. Try to see what is the data mesh going to bring for you? Where can I start small? And how would that scale? Still looking at your modern data strategies and your enterprise architecture. That's at least my opinion, because I've not seen much success from all these kind of assessments to try to define how to get this data mesh working for you.
Yeah, I think one thing I'd like to poke at a little bit there is not are you just ready to get started, but where are you going to deliver value and how is that value going to scale? Because I talk to people about this of, if you're doing data mesh to deliver on one or two use cases, it's not worth it. The effort is not worth it. And at best, you'll you don't want to try and change the entire organization up front. But at some point, that's kind of the point, is to change the way most organizations are working, really in this productized way, and really, distribute the data capabilities, but in a federated way so that there is some oversight and there is some, especially that interoperability and things like that, where it's not point to point interoperability. There's kind of more broad ways of doing this, but it's not worth it to do one or two use cases. Like the juice isn't worth the squeeze. There's too much cost there. And what you'd probably end up doing is creating yet another way that a small group of people do data work instead of one that, and so then there's just yet another point where it's harder to interoperate with the rest of the organization. And, part of doing data mesh is being aware that that's going to be the case and being very cognizant of how you interoperate with the rest of that organization. But if that doesn't spread and spread and spread, it becomes yet another platform that was built, yet another way of working that's not, universal and all that stuff. So when you're having those conversations of somebody saying, I want to do data mesh, is there a point where you'd say, please don't? Because I whenever I do, nobody listens to me and I can't figure out exactly why. Even Jabak has said it. People were really expecting Jabak to be like, every company should do data mesh. She's like, no, that's not at all the case. And so how do you think about those conversations, or how would you talk to somebody out there that's saying, I want to do data mesh because they want to do data mesh because it feels like if you do it right, it solves all these problems, but they may not be having those problems, or it may not be the most efficient way to solve those problems. How do you think about having that heart-to-heart conversations? I know it's very, very difficult, and it depends because it's very different for each one, but if you were in their shoes, how would you reflect back and say, am I just ready, right? Like you said, because then that says, you want to do it, you're going to do it. It's just, you have to be there, but is this the right fit?
Yeah, it's when you look at the data mesh, it's a big thing. It's a big framework. It impacts everywhere, right? In the way you want to do it. So if you would say that, okay, how can we do this? And then you say, well, I'm not sure if it's the best fit, then these are our conversations, right? Because often it's already established within some kind of data strategy or way to do it. The thing that I'd like to say, at least, and also from my experience and also reflecting back on some of these similar kind of conversations that I had regarding this topic, is that by actually doing an actual, let's just call it an assessment about what is the value you want to gain from, it will already point you into the direction of is this really going to work? And if the answer is not a hard yes or no, but a kind of it depends, then what you could do is, again, start small. because then at least you could see, well, what does work, what doesn't work, right? And also then, again, you should be able and also be really realistic about stopping what you're doing because it doesn't work, right? And that is hard because for a lot of organizations, once they step into these kind of things, it's hard to get out, right? It's very hard to get out, even if the learnings are not going to be pointing in the directions that you want. You just want to, well, let's just modify it a little bit. Let's just, change it a little bit so we still can continue. You do need to come to a point what works for me or not. For instance, I had one organization where I saw, well, they only left that one capability there that worked for them, but did stop the rest because they had the feeling we might not be able to achieve, for instance, true data product ownership or something like that. But at least now we have a way to easily provide people a way of telling where data is, like really in terms of like, where is it, where does it reside, right? And how can I find it? That for them was already enough for now. And they did see the value in data mesh, right? Because again, it's kind of hard to say something about the data mesh not being a good idea if you look at these principles, right? They sound very good and they are very logical, but they might not be that important for a lot of organizations. So again, it's all about trying to really uncover what is the value you want to do here. If you're not sure, go ahead, try, fail fast. I mean, you try to see what brings you value. If it doesn't bring value, reassess and then really see if it works, yes or no. I think that's the only... But in the end, you're right. This is absolutely art. And in some ways, it's already kind of like a done deal and we just have to work with what you have.
Yeah, it's the way a lot of organizations work. It's just like, if you've got approval for it, then you have to keep going. And even if it's not, and it's the measure, is this a quality issue or is this an issue that's more broad and that data mesh would be the right fit? And again, is that juice worth the squeeze? It's always a difficult question. But so we've talked about a whole bunch of different things here. Is there anything we didn't talk about that you'd like to, or any way you would want to wrap up kind of the content of the episode?
No, maybe one thing to mention that we didn't really talk into detail and we don't have to do it right now, but I think it's worth to mention is the perception of trying to decentralize everything. It's something that I'm facing a lot in conversation. It's like the holy grail to achieve for some people, which is like really hard to try to convince otherwise, but it's really perfectly fine to also have hybrid forms, right? I like to see the data mesh framework also, if you look at, the pictures about how domains interact with each other, decentralized, federated kind of governance and that kind of thing. There's no one size fits all. It's perfectly fine to have some hybrid forms where parts of it might be centralized, especially for domains that are a little bit less mature, and then have a plan of if they are reaching some level of maturity, they say, well, they can now have true ownership of data, then they can basically evolve into that, right? So it's perfectly fine to try to think about hybrid forms that work for you. It's constantly, it's an iterative process. It's a constant feedback loop. If it's one thing I would really like to take away from this that I hope that the listeners would like really think about and take away from this is this learning and this iterative feedback cycle, right? That's the only way of driving it forward because nobody is really an expert on this thread because it's so new and everything like that. That means that automatically you cannot predict the next step, what will come 100%, right? You need to adapt. So make sure at least that adaption, the way that you adapt to this can be done in a quick way. That's, I think, one thing I would like.
Yeah, two things in there. One, there is that misconception that Jamaka said we must decentralize absolutely everything. And it's just like, no, I mean, literally the fourth one is federated. That doesn't mean decentralized. That means that there's a decentralized aspect. But yes, exactly. And what you're talking about as well is transitory state, right? Like you might have an end picture in mind, but there's a transitory state as things are, this kid wants to be, a professional footballer, a soccer player. They're five. They're not going to be running around like Messi and being able to, Messi may be a word that you'd use to, but not Lionel Messi, but specifically that they're, chasing butterflies and falling over and doing right. That. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of folks that would love to follow up with you. Where's kind of the best place to do that? Anything specific you'd like people following up about?
People can reach out to me on my LinkedIn. Anything regarding data mesh, and especially what we've been talking about, how to start the journeys, right? I'm really interested in this topic. So yeah, happy to hear from this.
Okay. And we'll drop a link to that in the show notes to make it easy for all those folks out there. But again, Boston, thank you so much for spending the time here with me today. And as well, thank you everyone out there for listening.
Thank you, Scott. Bye-bye.
I'd again like to thank my guest today, Boston Carmio, who's a customer delivery architect of data and analytics at AWS Professional Services. You can find a link to his LinkedIn in the show notes as per usual. Thank you.
Hopefully that interview episode was really useful for you. Please do consider getting in touch with guests from the show, from these episodes. Most have said they'd really love people to reach out to them. And please, as well, if you've got a minute, rate and review the podcast somewhere. It really is honestly super helpful for other people looking into kind of data podcasts to kind of get this in front of them. Data Mesh Radio is again provided as a free community resource by Data Mesh Understanding. It's produced and hosted by me, Scott Herleman. In April of 2023, I left DataStax, who were wonderful in getting the Data Mesh community stuff started. So give them a shout for streaming and real-time AI needs. But I left to start my own industry analyst kind of information as a service firm. Our offerings are affordable and you can do them on a one-off or a month-to-month basis. You know, read kind of, throw it on the credit card. Don't worry about like going through purchasing and things like that. The services include lots of practitioner roundtables, you know, one-on-one data mesh kind of planning or feedback sessions and tailored introductions to other data mesh practitioners that are focused around your topics of interest. You know, what are you actually running into challenges with? We also have some free programs around introductions and roundtables that people can kind of check out as well. Check the show notes or just go to datameshunderstanding.com for more info or helpful resources. As always, if you have suggestions for guests or topics, please do get in touch as well and have a wonderful rest of your day. Now let's hear that funky outro music.